they experienced this bifurcated experience of New Orleans that they describe as before Katrina and after Katrina. And so much of what that after was like is that these very close ties of kinship and community that really defined life in New Orleans for the people lived there were rent apart by Katrina in a way that was never knit together. I mean, people were kind of called refugees, and there was all this sort of othering language that was used to describe them. But really what they were was internally displaced people. And many of those people never, ever, ever came back. So this was just an absolutely transformative event in the lives of these people and this city, and continues to be to this day.
Well, Tracy A. Curry, I just want to congratulate you on the series. Tracy is the Academy Award nominated director of the acclaimed new documentary series, Hurricane Katrina, Race Against Time, now streaming on Disney and Hulu. And that does it for this show. Special thanks to our local crew here in Telluride, Greg Kearns and Stash Wislocki and Patrick Dyer and Dallas Sainsbury and Dennis Moynihan. Special thanks also to everyone at the Telluride Film Festival who helped make this broadcast possible, and to Telluride's community radio station, Koto FM, that has broadcast Democracy Now! For so many years. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Firk, Renee Feldstein, Augusta Messiah Rhodes. I hope to see folks Sunday at 1 at the premiere of the Democracy Now! Documentary, Steal This Story, Please, at the Mason Theater here in Telluride. I'm Amy Goodman with the Main Street.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive is here. Help us reach our $45,000 goal. Sign up to support us during this critical time for community media, now through September 20th. All you have to do is check out kboo.fm/give. Text KBOO to the number 44321 or mail us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and support Radical Radio together.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the Fall Membership Drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Tina Kotek's executive order to ban cell phones in Oregon schools goes into effect January 1st.
The Rose Quarter Highway Reconstruction Project begins.
And in national news, Trump's Doge team copied the personal data of 300 million Americans.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 29th, 2025. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Dave Johnson. The National Institutes of Health has just granted a team of Oregon Health Science University researchers $8.4 million for a five-year project to continue their work on a cure for HIV. A few patients were cured of HIV from stem cell transplantation. The stem cell transplant process had been tested on macaque monkeys who had been infected with HIV. Though the ethics of testing on animals is controversial, the test worked successfully, and the monkeys are still alive and now virus-free. The patients who were cured, Adam Castillejo, Paul Edmonds, and Mark Frankie, will contribute their cells to engineer a cure for HIV. These patients were cured by a treatment usually used for cancer. The process effectively involves ridding a person of their own immune system and transplanting someone else's immune system into their body. The process can be highly risky, with patients risking being killed by the process or contracting a painful chronic disease, which involves the two immune systems fighting one another. Scientists have studied this as a cure before, but the grant is to find an effective and safe cure, which no one else has accomplished so far. 10 patients have been cured to date with the stem cell transplant for cancer. 8 of those were given cells from a person with a genetic mutation that confers resistance to HIV. The research team plans to take biological samples from three patients who have volunteered and were cured by this method. They hope to better understand and describe the immune response that led to their cures. This article was informed by reporting from Oregon Public Broadcasting.
Oregon Governor Tina Kotek's executive order banning phones in schools is now being implemented. In all school districts in Oregon, schools must ban student use of phones throughout the school day, or as the regulation puts it, quote, bell to bell, no cell. Districts must adopt the policy by the end of October and begin enforcing the policy by January 1st. One of the biggest changes, especially for high schools in many districts in Oregon, is that students will no longer have access to their phones at between classes or during mealtime. Some school staff are concerned that students will opt to leave campus during lunch break instead of taking advantage of the affordable meals program that they offer students. Brookings Harbor High School will allow students to leave campus for lunch and will allow to-go boxes for school-funded lunches so that students can leave campus to eat lunch and use their phones. All district officials have stated that their focus will be on personal responsibility rather than punishment when the policy is enforced. However, enforcement could look like taking a phone away for a class period or full school day, or asking a parent to pick up the phone or have a meeting with a teacher. Policy exceptions will be allowed for those with special medical needs or disabilities. Parents have expressed concerns about being able to reach their children in case of an emergency, but school officials reassure that students will have their phones nearby in lockers or backpacks as long as they are turned off. Educators are hopeful that the phone ban will encourage social interaction, more focused learning, and engagement.
Construction begins on I-5 despite a funding crisis. In the upcoming special session, legislators will discuss where the limited transportation funding will be allocated and how they can get more from citizens. Meanwhile, Oregon Department of Transportation has begun the construction of the highly controversial and woefully underfunded $2.1 billion Rose Quarter Freeway Expansion Project. Previous plans for a community groundbreaking session have been put on hold, even though the actual groundbreaking has not. Concerns about how people will react to the project amid the funding crisis have quieted the project. The first stage of the plan that they are currently working on will construct stormwater facility and install seismic retrofitting for two I-5 bridge structures. The cost of this phase of the project is $75 million. The rest of the plan includes expanding the freeway and performing cap construction, which is intended to reconnect the historically black Lower Albina district. On Friday, August 29th, legislators will meet for a special session called by Oregon Governor Tina Kotek on how the limited transportation budget will be spent. The current budget crisis could mean hundreds of layoffs from the Oregon Department of Transportation. If lawmakers pass a transportation budget revision, it will likely include an increase in taxes on citizens.
Citizens from all over the world are coming together to launch boats to end Israel's siege on Gaza. KBOO's Hannah Francis has more on the story.
Citizens from 45 countries have come together to launch a flurry of boats to end the siege on Gaza. The Global Samud Flotilla will launch on August 31st from Barcelona, and subsequent launches will follow. Samud is Arabic for steadfast perseverance. Kalita Macy, a woman providing media support from Portland for some of the U.S. boats joining the Global Samud Flotilla, says that boats aim to break the siege by using numbers.
So Gaza itself has been under siege since 2008, 2007. And so they've been sending flotillas with humanitarian aid trying to break that siege for the last, 18 years? And so, you know, they've been sending two boats. One of the boats actually was attacked. A lot of them have been stopped. And, you know, the boats, the crew on the boats have been, you know, kidnapped by Israel and have been stopped every time. And so now we're tired of sending this one and two boats. We're like, no, we need to do it big. We need to do something. You know, we can't just keep letting this go. And so that's why, like, everybody's coming together and we're sending multiple boats, because we're just like, what else are we going to do? We need to do something. And so so getting this together was, you know, it's a historic event. It's never been done before. We're tired of seeing this happen continuously, like being stopped. We're tired. The Gazans are tired. You know, the Palestinians are tired. So we're trying to take every action possible to make this happen and to break the siege.
For an in-depth conversation with Kolita Macy about the boats going to Gaza, stay tuned for News in Depth at 5:30. For the KBOO Evening News, I'm Hannah Francis.
Labor Day protests target the political power of the very wealthy. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
5051 stands for 50 states, 50 protests, one movement. Bring people together across the country, regardless of walks of life, in opposition to the executive overreach of the current administration, because it hurts everyone, unless you're a billionaire.
Hunter Dunn with the 5051 movement says nationwide protests are pushing back against a billionaire takeover of democracy. Labor and community groups are planning nearly 1,000 events. Teachers unions warn that President Donald Trump's dismantling of the Department of Education and ending its grants could break already overstretched school budgets. The administration had frozen nearly $90 million in education grants until forced to release them. In Kentucky, Boone County Education Association President Kelly Reed says one problem was schools had already built the funding into their budget plans.
When you make a promise, you need to fulfill that promise. When you make a promise to communities, and really when you make a promise to students who are the most vulnerable.
Kentucky data show teacher pay adjusted for inflation is nearly 20% below 2008 levels. Wisconsin advocates are pressing Congress to pass the Child Care for Working Families Act, which would cap costs at 7% of a family's income. Paula Drew with the Wisconsin Early Childhood Association says she experienced the issue firsthand.
The cost of childcare then was more than our mortgage payment, and we were definitely making other decisions of what not to do with our finances in order to be able to afford the necessities, and I would really consider childcare as being a necessity.
The bill is backed by most Democrats, but Republicans argue it's too costly. Supporters say it would benefit more than 90% of Wisconsin families and stabilize the early care workforce. The White House has been threatening to send the National Guard to Chicago and now says it may use a Navy base north of the city to support migrant detentions. As in most big cities, violent crime in Chicago has fallen sharply, but White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt says the administration has to act because of the failings of Illinois' Democratic governor.
This is J.B. Pritzker's legacy, by the way.
Pritzker and Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson say they'll sue to block any military deployment, calling it harmful and illegal. Former President and Illinois Senator Barack Obama also warned the expanded use of troops on U.S. soil puts the liberties of all Americans at risk. CDC Director Susan Menares is challenging the legality of her firing, and three top agency officials have resigned in protest over what they call the weaponization of health policy. Senators say they'll question Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. about the shakeup at the Finance Committee hearing next week. Nearly 200 former and current FEMA staff signed an open letter accusing Secretary Kristi Noem and the Department of Homeland Security of dismantling disaster relief programs. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on a global fleet of boats being launched to end the siege on Gaza. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali, and then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be 82 degrees, about now, with a low of 58 degrees overnight. And tomorrow, Portland will get a high of 83 degrees and a low of 58 again. Today in 1970, more than 20,000 Mexican-American anti-war activists marched in the Chicano Moratorium in East Los Angeles. The protest was in support of peace and in protest of the Vietnam War, which claimed Latino lives at a disproportionate rate. Though the protest was peaceful, police attacked it over business owners' concerns of looting. Three people were killed and hundreds arrested. The quote of the day is from Luis Valdez, American playwright, screenwriter, director, and actor born to migrant parents from Mexico. He said, quote, "No Statue of Liberty ever greeted our arrival in this country. We did not, in fact, come to the United States at all. The United States came to us."
A man who was taken away from his family when he was just 2 months old is reunited with his indigenous family after 50 years. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A tearful and emotional reunion took place recently in Manitoba. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, a Scoop survivor was reunited with his indigenous family after 50 years.
Jonathan Hooker was taken from his family in 1975. He was 2 months old. He is from the Mosakahiken Cree Nation in northern Manitoba. His new middle-class white family moved to New Zealand when he was 18 months old. Hooker always knew he was adopted but was never able to locate his birth mother. That is, until an ancestry test, which led him to make contact with his half-sister who lives in Texas.
So hopefully somebody else, again, from will see this and hopefully maybe start looking for their family, or it'll give them some clues to reach out and help.
Hooker had tried to find his natural family a few years ago on a visit to Canada, but without success. This time he was embraced by his biological mother, Patsy George, when he arrived at the airport in Winnipeg.
I thought I would never see him again. He was only 2 months old when they took him away from me and my other daughter, a month old.
George also recently found out that Hooker was married and had children. She said she would see her grandchildren one day. It's believed that about 300,000 Indigenous children were taken from their homes in a government operation known as the 60s Scoop. Many were placed with non-Indigenous families across Canada and around the world. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A haunting crime story and an Alaska Native legend are at the center of a new documentary that will premiere on the streaming platform Hulu next month. Ayulna Naiden with the Alaska Desk has more on the film, which is called Blood and Myth.
Blood and Myth looks into a real-life crime case that happened in Northwest Alaska over a decade ago. James Domick Jr. is the executive producer of the new documentary.
It's just an incredible story of survival and legends and violence and culture.
Domick worked at KNBA for 3 years, starting in 2016. During his time there, a co-worker asked him if he knew any Alaska stories that would make a good podcast. Domick told him about Teddy Kyle Smith, the Inupiaq actor from Kayana. In 2012, troopers were investigating the suspicious death of his mother when Smith fled to a cabin and had a violent encounter with two hunters. He was later convicted of attempted murder. Smith said that Inukuns, or little people, guided his actions. Domick described the incident in his 2019 audiobook called Midnight Sun. The new Hulu documentary is a movie adaptation of the audiobook. Domick grew up in Kotzebue, hearing about the little people, creatures that exist in various legends from Inuit groups across the globe.
If all of us had the same story and we're all so spread out, it might have an air of truth to it.
In the film, Domick says he also wanted to highlight the issue of justice in rural Alaska, where the state struggles to provide a consistent law enforcement presence. Domick says that Blood and Myth is a true crime documentary told through an Indigenous perspective, which is rare in today's entertainment industry.
This is the type of story I wanted to see, and no one was making it. So I made it for me. Everyone else is invited. to listen and watch. But at the end of the day, it's something I made for me.
Domek has worked in film production, but being an executive producer in his own film is a first for him. He says he wondered if it was his story to tell, but decided to do it after talking to his family and elders in his community. In Anchorage, I'm Alona Naiden.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Charles Borges filed a complaint through the Government Accountability Project claiming Trump appointees copied personal information of over 300 million Americans to a private server. Borges is the chief data officer at the Social Security Administration, or SSA. He said that the people who did this were former employees of the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, who were appointed to the SSA by the Trump administration. Cybersecurity officials within the SSA described the copy of the data as very high risk. The SSA's existing cloud infrastructure is managed by Amazon Web Services. Borges says the server that the data was copied to seems to have been created in the existing cloud, but doesn't have independent oversight and has far fewer security measures in place. In an email to NPR, SSA stated that the data remains secure. An NPR report mentions that DOGE has repeatedly mismanaged sensitive data from Americans in an effort to consolidate it. NPR reports DOGE took sensitive data from the National Labor Relations Board, and DOGE officials also appear to have used personal data to advance unsupported claims about voter fraud.
A Colorado manufactured home community is getting more energy efficient. A project is helping to retrofit 16 homes with more insulation, ceiling, and electric stovetops and heat pumps. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. At a manufactured or mobile home community in Colorado, some residents may soon see their energy bills drop dramatically. Paulo Tavares Velasco, an engineer at the Colorado School of Mines, has partnered on an effort to make 16 homes more energy efficient. He says some low-income residents there have been spending 15% of their income just on energy.
If we can reduce that by half or even more, we're making a significant impact there.
He says manufactured homes often have above-ground pipes that freeze in the winter, and they have little space for insulation in the roof. So last year, the team started with retrofits like air sealing the homes and adding insulation to the floors. And in winter, these upgrades started to pay off.
Residents were pretty happy about having their pipes not freezing anymore, houses were much warmer and more comfortable.
This year, the team installed appliances like heat pumps and induction stoves, which run on electricity instead of fossil fuels. And to power these appliances with clean energy, they help families subscribe to a community solar farm. Residents are already seeing their bills start to drop. So this project is demonstrating how manufactured homes can become more climate-friendly, comfortable, and affordable. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
The White House has tapped a top RFK Jr. deputy as acting CDC director. And Texans have planned an action called Workers Over Billionaires. With those stories and more, it's Mike Clifford.
The Public News Service Door Newscast, August 29th, 2025. I'm Mike Clifford. The White House Thursday selected a top deputy of Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to serve as the acting head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention after a clash over vaccine policy and in the departure of several agency leaders, according to two people familiar with the decision. That from the Washington Post. They report the selection of Jim O'Neill, currently the Deputy Secretary at the Department of Health and Human Services, as interim leader of the CDC, potentially clears a path for Kennedy to continue his efforts to overhaul vaccine policy after the agency's previous leader, Susan Monterez, balked at his requests. And for the Associated Press, Russia launched a major attack on Kyiv early Thursday that included a rare strike on the center of Ukraine's capital, killing at least 21 people, wounding 48, and damaging European Union diplomatic offices, authorities said. Next, with Labor Day coming up Monday, some workers in Texas will use the day to voice their displeasure with how the country is changing under the Trump administration.
Workers over billionaires protests are being held in 19 different cities across the state, from Burleson to El Paso to Harlingen. Mackenzie Barris with Jobs with Justice says workers feel like they're losing their rights.
We are seeing right now a full-scale attack on our basic democratic right to organize and to come together at work to protect our rights and to collectively work for better conditions through labor unions. We're seeing that first at the federal level.
She says they believe the way to stop the takeover is with collective action. The protests are a continuation of a movement launched in May. Protest information is available at mobilize.us. I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
Meantime, organizers say rallies across Michigan will spotlight issues ranging from fair wages to health care and school funding.
The aim is to push back against what organizers call a billionaire takeover of democracy. Labor leaders say the holiday is more than just a chance to fire up the grill. It's about building a stronger movement for workers' rights. In Michigan, where the top 1% take home nearly 14 times what the average worker earns, organizers say the message is much needed. Marianne Mahoney and the Novi Democratic Club notes the significance of unions in the Great Lakes State.
We can thank union and unionized labor for building the middle class, especially in Michigan, in the Detroit area. You know, we can go back and talk about UAW. They really were pivotal to growing the middle class.
Mahoney says her group will rally in the city of Novi on Novi Road in Grand River, along with dozens of others. The May Day Strong campaign launched May 1st and now spans all 50 states. Crystal Blair reporting.
This is Public News Service.
In the year 1941, 2,500 steelworkers staged a walkout. Rick Smith has labor history in two.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That's the day 2,500 steelworkers at the Prest Steel Car Company near McKees Rock, Pennsylvania, walked off the job. It was the second walkout in 2 weeks. Workers effectively shut down production of armor plate for the Navy, shell forgings for the Army, and railroad cars used to transport military material. The company had gone back on promises of holding a collective bargaining election. Steelworkers Organizing Committee sub-regional director Abe Martin told the Pittsburgh Press that while the union had not called the strike, workers had, quote, walked out themselves because they are fed up with the company's discrimination against them. SWAC had been trying to organize the plant for years, but the company had engineered an election for a so-called independent union 18 months earlier when the complex was only operating at half capacity. Workers walked out at the beginning of the month and ended their strike on the guarantee that negotiations for a new election would begin. But when they returned, they found that some were stripped of their seniority, while others were forcefully transferred to new departments. The day before, machine shop workers on the afternoon shift were fed up and dropped their tools. Word spread throughout the evening, and by early morning, picket lines were solid and production had come to a complete standstill. When the company tried to force reopening of the plant after Labor Day, 1,500 workers formed picket lines at the gate to stop scabbing. They returned to work 10 days later in compliance with a request by the National Defense Mediation Board. The NLRB rejected SWAC's election petition 2 months later, but SWAC persisted and won exclusive bargaining rights the following June.
Everybody check on your loved ones and get your head on straight. It's time for the Point Puzzle. Point Puzzle is a weekly puzzle from KPOV High Desert Community Radio in Bend. Every week, a winner from the last week will be selected from emailed answers and announced on air, and a new puzzle will be posed. Now here's Pearl Stark with the puzzle.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you for two famous authors born in the 1800s whose last names start with the same letter. If you drop one letter from each name, one becomes an animal, and the other is an adjective often used to describe this animal. Well, the answer is Virginia Woolf and Oscar Wilde. Our winners this week are Connor, Cameron, and Scott Kaplan, who stream KPOV from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
The key to the room of your own and a mind without end. And here's a young girl.
Listener Barry Hurwitz sent in a great companion puzzle to last week's. Again, send two authors, born in the 1800s, whose last names start with the same letter. Drop a letter from one, and this time you will have a tree and an adjective that could describe that tree. So again, send two authors born in the 1800s whose last names start with the same letter. Drop a letter from one of the names, and you have a tree and an adjective that could describe that tree. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Big red tree grew up and out, throws up its leaves, spins round and round.
This has been Pearl Stark with your point puzzle for the week of August 25th. The point puzzle is produced at KPOV. High Desert Community Radio.
You are listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is me, Dave Johnson, and Hanna Francis. The production, the producer and engineer is Hanna Francis. Special thanks to Mike Clifford, Antonia Gonzalez, Farah Siddiqui, Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, Rick Smith, Mandy Stapleford, and Pearl Stark. The interim evening news director is Hanna Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on